in 100 years.
That shit house,
if you think we'll be insightful, clever, or just well researched. We're here to say that's not the case. We'll just go out and wing it. We are two guys, one cup.
Hello and welcome to Two Guys, One Cup Summer Edition. My name is Charlie Clawson and this series is My Club. This week, I'm chatting with Josh Earle. He's a comedian. He's the host of Don't You Know Who I Am, which is an awesome podcast that you should check out right now. Well, finish listening to this episode, then go check out his podcast. He's a North Melbourne supporter. And as you know, I am fascinated by North Melbourne. Well, fascinated by a player at North Melbourne, Ben Cunnington. I wanted to know a bit more about the culture of North Melbourne. Where does that shin bonus spirit come from? And we talk about a bunch of other things as well, including Wayne Carey and John Longmire. It's a really good chat. So, ladies and gentlemen, here's Josh Earle. Josh, welcome to the show. Thank you so much. Let me apologize in advance. People listening, they won't be able to see this, but the room I'm in, it looks like the bank vault at the bottom of the Snowtown Bank.
It looks very much like a padded cell. I'm sorry to say, but it's very white.
Well, you do a lot of podcasts every year, and so the padded cell thing, you'd understand, right?
I understand. Yeah, editing, listening back to your own voice. Yeah, that's where I need to be.
So we're going to talk about the Kangaroos. Now, I must admit, it was hard to find people to talk about the Kangaroos, and I started realizing the more I thought about it, I don't actually know that much about North Melbourne. Like on the show, Will and I always joke about the shin bonus spirit, but I think that's about where it ends in terms of my deep understanding of North Melbourne. So I did a quick, this is my research for my show. I did a 5-minute Wikipedia search and I was really surprised to learn that North Melbourne has only, and when I say only, this is St Kilda supporter saying only, but only 4 flags because the impression I always had of North Melbourne, because I first became aware of them in the Wayne Carey era, was that they were a powerhouse club. I understood that membership was small, but I just had assumed that you guys had a, like Melbourne, like a long tradition of flags early on. And then, you know, your last great era was the sort of Carey era.
Well, I think because we also did Friday Night Football in the 90s and that was always so big, which it kind of tricked you with the amount of supporters that we actually had. So it's like, oh yeah, the games are full. It's because people want to go and see a game of footy on a Friday night. So now that we no longer have the Friday Night Football, you're really seeing the true fans.
But it's interesting you say that because, yes, you had Friday Night Football, but you also had one of the best teams of the 90s, if not, you know, of the modern era. Like, I think about going to see, you know, St Kilda sort of, the most memorable game I have against North Melbourne is the 97 prelim, where you guys were sort of raging hot favourites coming off 96. And we beat you at the MCG on a Friday night. And for the first time I was ever going to see St Kilda in a grand final. But to me, that was like, you know, we beat Cobra Kai or, you know, we defeated the big villains. But then with deeper research, it's like, you're not those guys at all.
No, it's so funny because, like, we always get said that we were the team of the 90s, which I like the fact that people say that. But if you look at the stats, it's pretty much, I would say West Coast were the team of the 90s. Right. West Coast seemed to always be there from the very start. We kind of, you know, 93 was when Carey kind of broke through as a superstar. But it wasn't until 96 when we won the premiership and then again in 99. So it was only those two premierships that we won. And we lost in 98, lost to you in 97, but that was it. And I still remember 94, the heartbreak of Geelong beating us, like Gary Ablett pretty much being held pretty well all day by Mick Martin. And then in the final like minute of the game, taking that mark, kicking the goal, and me just knowing at school with so many Geelong supporters, I was dead on Monday. I was like, just, dead man walking.
I mean, it seems to be when you look at North Melbourne's premiership history, it's basically two dominant eras with two legendary coaches, two revolutionary legendary coaches who managed to kind of assemble like just enough superstars, but then a bunch of really good sort of B-level players. Do you agree with that? It was like basically just two great eras?
Yeah, so I was born in 81, so missed the Malcolm Blight era, but I've watched enough of the AFL-made documentaries about it that really, it's that whole thing of like, you know, Ron Barassi coming on and Malcolm Blight and all those players who, like, just buying up people and trying to, you know, pretty much buy a premiership, which is what, especially back then, would have been just not what you do. Like, now it's a bit more player movement kind of stuff. But back then it was like, no, you played for your club and that's your club and you only play for the one club. And so I don't know if at the time people thought it was a true premiership, that 77-79 one. But the 96-99 one, absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. Oh, sorry, I think I've said the wrong dates for those premierships. That's right. 75-76. But, yeah, the 96-99, like, I was born 81, so 13 at the start of, like, the Carey kind of uprise.
And perfect age to get into footy.
Too. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, you're too young to go to the pub with your mates, but too old to be doing other stuff. So it's like, all right, I'm going to be watching football on my weekends. And it was like, and the fall from grace for Carey has been heartbreaking for someone who, as a kid, really did idolize the guy. Like, he was my favorite player. I met him once because Peter German, who was a great North Melbourne player, ended up coaching my hometown team, the Burnie Dockers. And so he would bring North Melbourne players down to run training drills and stuff like that. And Wayne Carey was the big one year. And my dad was involved with the Burnie Dockers. So Wayne Carey came to my house and signed a jumper and a poster for me and just kind of went off. I was 14. So it was like just
that's incredible.
The coolest thing. And you'd tell kids at school, Wayne Carey came to my house. And like, no, he didn't. Yeah. Fuck off. Like, your dad got it signed at the club, but it was like, no, he came to the house. He knocked on the door. He didn't come in, just did it. And it was obviously Peter German knew I supported North Melbourne and there wasn't too many of us. So it was a pretty easy drive around. All right, there's three kids, you're going to make their day. So let's go to these three houses and then we'll head down to the actual players talk that he was doing. But so that 96 one, especially, I was year 10 high school and it was like, football at my school was everything. Everyone had a team. And I don't know if that's still the case. I've got two boys. They don't really follow. They're 6 and 9. So they just have no interest in following football. But I remember just in our family, if it wasn't football, we'd have nothing to talk about with my parents and my brothers. That was it.
And your family, were they all North Melbourne too?
No, none of them. I was the only one. So my dad was Carlton. My mum was Essendon. And so for the first, 6 years of my life, I was also Carlton because Dad was like,
that's Romeo and Juliet story, isn't it?
Essendon, I know. Carlton. Yeah. Yeah. And all of my mum's side's Essendon. And they're my least favourite team still because of the amount of bullying I got from that side of the family. Because Essendon in the night as well, it's just only in the last, 10 years have they been not that good. But for so long, so good. But I went to, when I was in, grade one or something like that, a kid, Tony Shepherd is his name, was a Richmond supporter and he was my best friend and he said, you should go for Richmond. And so I went home that night and said to Dad, I go for Richmond now. And Dad was like, no, you don't. I said, no, I go for Richmond. He goes, okay. And that night, Richmond played North Melbourne in an Ansett Cup or whatever the thing was that pre-season. And North Melbourne absolutely pumped them. And Dad was like, that's your team. And I'm like, no, I go for the other ones. He goes, well, you can only change one time. And I was like, all right, I go for North Melbourne. And that was it. It just stuck from then on. I went for North Melbourne. Never changed.
You know, it's funny. Believe it or not, you're not the first guest to have put forward you can only change once rule.
Yeah.
I'm starting to realize because I changed once too when I was about the same age. I switched to Melbourne, to the Demons for about a week and then went back to St Kilda. In my family, different to yours, they're all Saints. And I'm always surprised when I talk to someone who's in a family where everyone goes for a different team because I just don't understand. Like, honestly, 90% of the conversations I have with my brother had to do with the St Kilda Football Club. I'm not sure we'd even talk if there wasn't football to talk about.
So my older brother goes for West Coast, which is even weirder to me. Because Tasmania has this real thing of you go for the Victorian teams. If you went for an interstate team, even though Tassie is interstate, it was a real, that's a weird, what do you go for Adelaide for? Or what do you go for Brisbane? Brisbane's not, because there was some few Fitzroy supporters who went, all right, we'll go for the Lions still. But yeah, West Coast, Adelaide, Fremantle, Port, you're like, that's such a weird team to support. But yeah, there are some of them down there. My brother's one.
And so Tassie, correct me if I'm wrong, but I feel like the Melbourne teams are the closest alliances to Tassie because of players who have played and stuff are the Hawks, the Saints, and North Melbourne, is that right?
They're the three teams. I'd probably say Hawks, Saints, and maybe St Kilda because of, St Kilda and Richmond,
Oh, Richmond, of course.
Because there's a few Richmond really great Tassie players who played for Richmond. I mean, I think
because I always,
Matthew Richardson is the one that a lot of people talk about.
But was Hawthorn traditional? Because I felt like in the 2000s, St Kilda was playing home games in Tassie. And I always thought that was such a smart move because we have so many like St Kilda supporters down there and so many players from Tasmania have played for the Saints. And then just like short-sightedness, Grant Thomas, they said, no, we're out of Tasmania because we couldn't win a game. That was the problem. We had home games there and we didn't win any of them. And then bloody Hawthorn swoop in. Like, they don't have enough already and just take the state of Tasmania. And I'm like, God damn it.
It's so far. I worked with a woman who was from Sydney and didn't follow football at all. And then when the Hawks won that first year, she was like, oh, congrats on your team winning. And I said, oh, my team wasn't even in it. She goes, oh, I thought Tasmania won. I said, no, that's Hawthorn. Like, they're just sponsored by Tasmania. And she just assumed they were Tasmania's team.
Yeah.
And it is. The fact that they won and then went straight down there to celebrate, it was like they really did embrace, all right, this is our major sponsor. We're going to go down there. And I think it's so funny though because Tassie is really split between the north and the south. So people in Hobart were not really travelling up to Launceston to watch Hawthorn play. It was pretty much the north of the state. And so now north are trying to kind of make their footing in Hobart. But the fact that we play Fremantle or West Coast down there, you're not going to have the diehard Fremantle West Coast fans in Hobart, so they're not really going to go to the game. So it is interesting how it's not really working out for North Melbourne as much as it did for Hawthorn.
Well, I mean, that's not just in regards to Tasmania, is it? Like, you can say that's like describes the two clubs over history. I mean, I chatted to Emma Race a few weeks ago, who's a Hawthorn supporter, and just hearing her tell stories of what it's like being a supporter when, on average, she'll see a flag every 3 years. And it just seems like she could have been speaking another language.
Yeah.
I feel like maybe as a Kangaroo supporter and a Saints supporter, we maybe have a bit more of a common language.
I know. I don't trust people who are my age who go for Hawthorn. Like, I understand if your whole family go for Hawthorn, but if you just chose it because they were always winning, I'm like, nah, get out of here. That's not you're not a real supporter.
It's like, and they always like,
like in the early 2000s, we weren't very good. It's like, oh, boo-hoo. Like, yeah, okay, sorry. You still had Shane Crawford. You still had, like, one of the best players in the league playing for you.
So when you were a kid, who was the first player that kind of, you know, caught your attention? You had the number on the back or you wore the badge?
John Longmire was my favourite player growing up. Yeah. I loved John Longmire. And then I kind of changed to Brett Allison.
Brett Allison. Because that one grab?
Yeah, the one mark is the big Brett Allison. And so, but I was number 39 when I played football, and that was also John Longmire. So I was that thing of like, and I was 39 because my cousin, who actually got almost got drafted the AFL, he got drafted to play. He got chosen to play for Fremantle, like, as in, but in when before they were in the league, like.
Okay.
He was in there, did his knee, didn't make it. But he was 39 and I got his old hand-me-downs and he was 39 because of Kappa. And so I'm not sure if this still happens, but growing up when I was like, you'd take a mark and everyone would yell Kappa. You'd either yell Kappa or you'd yell Jesselenko. And I'm not sure if Kappa was just a Tassie thing because I've not seen or heard anyone do it here in Melbourne.
No, 100% we did. Kappa, I mean, I think even moving to Sydney 20 years ago, I'm pretty sure when we're doing kick to kick, it's, but then again, there's guys my age. But it is interesting, what do kids call out? Is it Liam Ryan? I mean, do you just say Ryan?
Yeah, like, I don't know what they say.
Jeremy Howe, but it's amazing, isn't it? Jeremy Howe is inarguably a better mark and player than Warwick Kappa.
Yeah.
Yet Warwick Kappa will always be synonymous with taking a specky.
Well, Howe's not a very good name to yell out as you're marking. Yeah. Kappa's got a bit of which I think is the Jesselenko because you can repeat that famous call. But it's like, there's something about Kappa. Yeah, it's great.
I mean, I have heard stories from people who have met Warwick Kappa that when they've had when they've played kick to kick with Warwick, he even calls out Kappa when he flies for a mark.
Of course he does.
But John Longmire, so I love that kind of like a second forward or like a sort of crash pack tall forward. Like, you got Wayne Carey, who's your Rolls Royce superstar, but then you always need like your Sundance kid to your Butch Cassidy.
Yeah.
Do you think if Wayne Carey hadn't been in the team that John Longmire would have been a better player, or do you think he found the perfect role?
No, I think that's the perfect role for him. I mean, he still kicked, like, he won the Coleman. Like, he was a great player. But I guess when you're taking, like, you've got the second best defender on you instead of the best defender. It does free you up a lot. And I think even in his coaching style, the fact Sydney have two great forwards or had to, like, I think he's even taken that into his coaching style. It's like, all right, we'll have the two options up forward.
I just have always thought that, you know, the modern equivalent of him and Carey was like Buddy and Roughhead. And then when Buddy left, Ruffy really stepped up. And I just always have thought, like, I wonder if John Longmire, like, I understand he's well regarded, he won a Coleman and stuff, but you just can't help being Scottie Pippen when Michael Jordan's in your team. You know what I mean?
Yeah. And unfortunately, we had a lot of Luke Longleys.
So, John Longmire is your favourite player of all time.
Yep.
Is there a cult player? Is there someone that maybe other people don't know about that you love?
Look, I love Ben Brown, although he is a cult, I think, for everyone in the league. Like, and I was very, like, really disheartened when he wasn't kind of even looked at to be a part of our future in 2020. Like, it was like, almost like they just made a decision, no, we're not going to play that style. And because I met him and he was so nice, and he's also from Tassie. And it was that thing of like, because I did this thing for the North Melbourne Football Club where I interviewed some of the players, and the PR guy for North Melbourne was like, all right, I've got, and it was like three guys, Magic Door, McMillan, Durant, I think, and it was like Dumont, and it was like, oh, you'll be fine with them. They're great. They're lots of fun. You'll have fun with them. And Ben Brown was the other one, and they're like, oh, you probably won't get anything out of him. He's a bit of a weird cat, just so you know. Like, he's nice, but, you know, you won't get much. And I found it so easy to talk to Ben Brown. And I realized, oh, because he's not like your typical footballer. He's got a philosophy degree. He's quite, like,
I love it.
Yeah, he loves Doctor Who.
He's like Patrick Swayze in Roadhouse.
Yeah, yeah.
He's got a degree in philosophy.
He loves Doctor Who. And I'm like, oh, yeah, around a football club, you're probably not going to have too many people to talk about that with.
Yeah.
But then I talked to the other guys. I'm like, oh, it's like I was back teaching and I was talking to the Year 12 boys because they had all their inside jokes when the camera wasn't on. And then when the camera started rolling, they were kind of just looking at each other and giggling. And it's like, all right, this is, I've really got to work to get something out of here. But Ben Brown, I was like, all right, we can just have an actual conversation about what's expected in the next year.
I mean, I don't know anything about Ben Brown apart from what I've seen on TV and read in the paper. But even not knowing him, I would have guessed that.
Yeah.
Like, you know, my joke about Ben Brown was it always looked like he was in the cast of Godspell. Like, I could imagine him, you know, driving a combi barefoot up to his shack where he makes like craft beer.
Wearing some orange flares and a vest. Yeah.
Yeah, with no shirt. Just like a denim vest. Covered in patches, rainbow patches, peace sign. No, he always struck me as a fairly kind of not typical AFL dude. And I was going to save this for the end, but let's talk about it now. So the exodus at the end of last year with the players, like, just take me through that as a North Melbourne supporter, because even from the outside, it seemed brutal and a bit kind of insensitive. What was your take on it?
Well, this is kind of the second time in the space of 3-4 years we've done that. So the big one was at the end of 2016, going into 2017 with Harvey and Petrie and Wells all leaving. And that was like, because those players were the real heart and soul of the club at that stage, especially like Boomer and Petrie were like, two of the people who you're like, all right, very consistent, like just so reliable. And then the fact that they kind of almost like they didn't get retired, but it was like, all right, you, especially Boomer, all right, time to go, even though.
I mean, in North Melbourne's defence, Boomer was 78 years old when finally they retired him.
I always had, as long as he was playing, I was happy because there was a player in the league older and shorter than me. And I was like, I can still make it. There could be one day they call me up. I don't know. But so the one this year, look, I think they did it in a really bad way because they were in the bubble still, or whatever they, you know, their equivalent of the bubble. They had to walk out past all the families. And I think it was quite like humiliating to be told that, oh, you're not going to be with the club, you're pretty much getting fired and then having to do like a walk of shame.
Yeah.
In front of the club. And look,
I mean, they film that when they do Australian Idol, when someone bombs an audition. You've got to walk out past everyone. Like, it's high drama.
Yeah, so unless they're making a club documentary, they watched The Last Dance and went, oh, here we go, we've got this, the last place. And but it was that thing of, I didn't really watch that much football last year either. Like, even though there was not much else to do, I just couldn't get into it. And so it was a really up in the air year, and with a change of coach as well. And I understand change of coach, you want to start fresh with your blueprint, whatever it is. But it's really tough when you like two kind of rebuilds in the space of 4 years.
Yeah.
You're like almost, okay, what happened with the last one? Okay, why is this one going to be any different?
Yeah. I mean, in some ways, look, I've just endured a 10-year rebuild that it wasn't as noisy a calamity as your one. But
yeah,
we invested 10 years. Like we printed out like a – we made a prediction in 2014. We did the roadmap to 2018 where we predicted, you know, make finals in 2018 and win our first premiership by 2020.
Yeah.
We invested all that time just being mediocre. Like we didn't have like this calamitous fall down. So I don't actually – I look, it's not great. You don't want your club to be in that, but it's almost better that you have your shit years right next to each other.
Yeah.
So then you can really go, okay, we've identified the problem. Because the worst thing that would happen is that, you know, maybe Rhys Shaw had an out-of-the-box year and you kind of just finish out and you get the wrong idea about where you are. You don't recruit properly. You don't trade properly. Yeah. And then you have a terrible year and you're screwed for another five.
Well, I think with both Dean Lally and Brad Scott, what we had was that we couldn't bottom out because we're not a destination club. So people didn't want to choose North Melbourne as their club to want to go to, which, you know, Collingwood, Hawthorn, they have people going, I'm wanting to go and play there. Mm. And so for that 2000, like 2007, 2000, up to, like we made prelims in like, I can't remember, it was like not that long ago, but had no expectation. It was almost like, oh, that's amazing that we did it. And going in with no expectations. And so when you say it's nice to have the things quite close together, you haven't supported North Melbourne for as long as I have, because I don't see that's the end of it. This is probably not right. Us bottoming out just yet, even though we finished second last. There is still lower to go, which is... Because North Melbourne do affect you in your life, because you're like... You never get too happy with anything. You don't. You go, well, they could, like, in the last 5 years, there's been so many games where we've lost by less than a goal when we should have won. I remember a couple of years ago, the game against Adelaide where they kicked 3 goals in the last 2 minutes. It was like, this is typical North Melbourne. This is just, yeah, of course this happened. Why wouldn't it happen to North Melbourne? Yeah. So
I hear that from every supporter, though, apart from Hawthorn and possibly West Coast.
Yeah.
But I hear that from so many supporters, which is, oh, it's so typically my team to blood. Like, especially when you talk to any of the smaller Melbourne clubs, like even Bulldog supporters, Melbourne, St Kilda, yeah. There is that kind of feeling that we're just doomed to, you know, always fail. But what does that say about us as people, Josh?
Like, we're realists.
What does it say about us?
We understand that life is tough and you're not always going to win. And it's how you cope in those losses. And it gives us resilience. And it makes us better people.
I don't know about that. Narrowly Meadows was talking about Fremantle. And she was saying how, you know, in the first kind of quarter, she realised that Hawthorn were a much better team. And Freo put up a little bit of a fight. But she left that game, that grand final, their first grand final ever, going, oh, well, we did okay. And I was like, Narrowly, that's a loser talk, man. And I think that, like, I'm only saying that from the perspective of a loser because, you know, I've been to 4 losing grand finals and I've found a way to rationalize all of those with the same kind of loser talk.
Yeah. Were you at the drawn grand final? I'm sure you've talked about this in another podcast, but you were at the drawn one?
Yes. Yes, I was.
Was that,
and that was
a worse feeling than the loss, or was that?
Yeah, I think, look, maybe it depends what side of the fence you're on, because for St Kilda, it was disappointing because we had all the momentum. If it wasn't for the bounce of that ball, we probably would have won. If you're a Collingwood supporter, you might be like, oh, we get a chance to reload. So I just remember it was a very eerie kind of feeling walking out of the MCG. It was dead quiet. And then the week leading up to it, I just, like the players, it turned out, couldn't muster the enthusiasm for the next week. Like I was trying hard and I had a lot of like very supportive messages, because I don't know about you, Josh, but I represent all of St Kilda to my friends, and you probably represent Kangaroos. So whenever there's an issue or they're in the papers or whatever, you'll get all the texts.
Yep.
So a lot of friends sending me well wishes for the replay. But I don't know. I just kind of felt like I always felt like 2009 was our one. That's where we should have beaten Geelong. If not for some terrible kicking, we should have won that. 2010 would have been a steal. The fact that they replayed it, I already felt like we'd gotten lucky to get that close in the first place.
Yeah, I feel bad for Nick Riewoldt because he, like, of all the players I've seen live, I think he is the best player I've ever seen actually play football live. Because I never got to see Wayne Carey play live because I was in Tasmania when he played. But, yeah, Nick Riewoldt, just seeing, because what they don't see on, like, TV is all the running he's doing off ball. It's just incredible to watch.
Have you ever watched him do a warm-up before a game? Like, he would regularly run like 4K before he even took to the field. Yeah. He would just be out on his own just running the length of the field back and forth. It's like just a freak athlete.
Yeah.
So your happiest memory, I imagine, was the 96 Premiership.
Yes, 96. I don't remember the 99. I was 18. Mm. And 2 days before, I was working at a hardware store and I tore my sciatica trying to move these shelves that I thought I could move on my own. And I had to be carried into the doctor's by my boss, like the bodyguard, like at the end of the bodyguard, he carried me in. And they put me on...
like an officer and a gentleman.
Yeah,
they just keep you up.
But they put me on these painkillers. And then I was 18, first year uni, living out of home, watching, and my flatmate at the time was a Carlton supporter. And so we were both like super excited. Our teams were in the grand final. But I don't remember any of the game. At halftime, apparently I was lying in the middle of the road because I'd had 2 pints of Guinness while I was watching the first quarter. And that was it. I don't remember anything. And so I was just lying in the middle of the road, apparently, trying to kick a football, and then had to be carried back inside again. And so had to wait until, like, because it wasn't even it was replayed that night, but I was out of it. So I had to wait until it came on VHS to buy the VHS to actually watch the 99 grand final.
Of course. Yeah, right. Because you're right in that weird sort of like still analog period where you couldn't just look up something immediately.
No.
So what was that like? I mean, forget the replay. What was it like anticipating when you could get the tape of the game?
Because I read all the reports of the games and all that kind of stuff, but it was so weird watching it in, like, it was like November, December when the tape came out and watching it, not even football season. Like, my flatmate, he absolutely did not want to watch that tape again. Like, he was like, I'm fine. I've watched us lose once. I don't need to watch it again. And so just also trying to find a time in the house going, all right, no one's here. All right, I'll put this on and watch it. And knowing the outcome, it was quite comforting. But also it was like, this is – without the high stakes, that grand final is not a very good grand final. It wasn't that great a game.
Are you one of those people who, if you know – that North Melbourne has lost, like you've taped a game, but you find out they've lost, that you won't bother watching it? Or have you got any curiosity?
I'm a terrible... My wife is always saying, don't even watch it. Why are you watching it? Like, I get so anxious about the games because no one else in my house cares about football. And so if I'm watching, I get very anxious and we'll turn it off for a bit, but then check the scores on my phone, then go back to watching it again. So if I know we've lost, I don't need to watch it. I'm fine. I've seen us lose before. I don't need to watch it. If there's been I'll watch the highlights. Like,
yeah.
They're pretty quick on YouTube putting the highlights up. So, yeah, I'll do that.
But tell me, so I also am married to someone who has no interest in football. Like, it's actually been, we've been together almost 20 years, and I'd say the majority of that time, 30% of my energy is spent convincing my wife that this is a worthwhile pursuit, even though they've never delivered me anything but pain and disappointment.
Yeah.
But what was your explanation, or how did you kind of explain your passion for the Kangaroos?
It was so when my wife met my dad, the first thing he said is, all right, this is all, let's get to the important thing. What football team do you go for? And she was like, oh, I don't have a team. I guess the Eagles, I'm from Perth. And that he could not believe that someone would not have a football team. And so me, because, you know, I met her after I did a theatre degree and, you know, arting around Melbourne and would watch football, but it wasn't a big part of my life in my early 20s when I first really met her. Like, I would watch the games, but it wasn't like, it was almost like a secret that you can be in both worlds. And so then, you know, the first few years, like probably the first year, I'd watch it without it. And then it was like, oh, I'm not going out because I'm going to go to the footy. And she's like, oh. So she came a few times and then liked having, oh, there's lots of people here. This is fun. And then she's like, oh, you're going again, are you? Okay. All right. Yeah, yeah. It's every second week we pretty much, yeah. But it was, she will ask about the players. That's why she liked Ben Brown, because he seemed like a nice man. She'll ask, oh, do they have? Are they married? Do they have kids? She likes all that, all those stories.
Backstory.
If I can get her in, so the Marlon, what's his name? Richmond player, Marlon Williams? No,
Pickett.
No, Marlon Pickett. That story, she loved that story. Yeah. She was in. She was. This is great. I can't wait to watch this guy play. And so, I try and get her in by telling her, oh, such and such. They just had twins, and it's amazing. And then she'll get in and watch it that way.
Yeah, I'm exactly the same. I have to create storylines. Like, to explain my own fandom to her, I talked about, you know, my father taking me to the, you know, a game at Moorabbin, and it was a bonding experience, blah, 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 blah. But then I started realizing I've got to give her play a narrative. So, like, with Max King, I'm like, see that guy there? He grew up barracking for the Saints.
Yeah.
They have, like, video of him wearing a Saints jumper, and now he's living out his boyhood dream. And he almost wasn't drafted because he did his knee. And she's like, oh, that's interesting. Or maybe she's just humouring me. I'm not sure yet.
The Magic Door last year, that was a big thing. Easily got her in. And then I even showed her Jason McCartney's game after his first game and last game, after the Bali bombing, and she watched that whole, like, it was a whole hour special that I think Fox Footy put it up, and it's great. And like, she was hooked into that. That was great because she didn't even know that story.
Gemma was being very supportive to a point. Like, I think I was actually getting her interested in the game till about 2007 it was 2006. We played Melbourne in an elimination final. And I said, I'm going to go around to my friend's place to watch it. She's like, yeah, have fun. And it was a game where St Kilda came out of the blocks. First half on fire. Fraser Gehrig was dominating. And then injuries took their toll. Melbourne overran us. And so I think, you know, we were up by 27 points, lost by like 3 goals in the end.
Yeah.
And so I leave my mate's place and I go home and the lights are all out. I'm like, that's weird. And so I go upstairs and Gemma's in bed, you know, sheets over her head. And I'm like, hey, what's going on? And she's like, they fucking lost. How did they fucking lose? And I'm like, what? And she said, well, after you left, I got curious and I put it on and they were winning. So I went down to the pub and I got a six-pack and I was really into it. Bitches gone. But then, how did they lose? They all got injured and they got run. And I'm like, oh, babe, see, this is the thing about sport. It gives and it takes away. The highs are high, but the lows are so low. She only experienced that one low and then she was out. Never did it again.
I remember the game I had that, but in the reverse, it was great. It was 2014, one of the finals, we were against Essendon. And Essendon came out of the bat and just was absolutely flying. And I had just done a show at the Comedy Store, got off stage. It was like halftime. We were absolutely getting pumped. And I'm like, oh, fuck. Because I was going to go to the pub somewhere and watch it. I thought, fuck it. I'll just go straight back to the hotel and watch it there. And I was staying because I was doing this show at like Parramatta for the ABC. That's where they were filming. So I was staying out there. And that's, a, you know, 20, 30 minute from the store. And as we were driving, I asked the guy, oh, can you put the football on? Because I was checking the scores on my phone. We're coming back. And then I raced from the cab straight up, watched the last quarter. And that's the game where Drew Petrie does the kind of the anchor man kind of pumping his fists.
It's the Frank the Tank.
Frank the Tank, yeah, not anchor man, old school, yeah. And it's so good. And me just in a hotel jumping around, just going, oh, there's no one. I'm too far out. I'm not going to go and party in Parramatta, but it was like, oh, this is one of those great things where I'm like, oh, this is probably the best way to watch it though. I can just enjoy myself and be silly with it.
That's amazing. Like, I actually got goosebumps with you just saying that because there is something about, like, obviously being in the crowd, that's amazing, but there is something about when it's this very, very personal, intimate moment when it's just you and the TV and you've just been yelling at the TV and, you know, you're pacing back and forth. There's a minute to go, you're 3 points up and you're just like, and it's so hard to explain to people who don't follow sport or don't even, I mean, AFL itself is such a kind of cultish kind of thing, like who you barrack for, but the stories, but like that thrill that you just got my heart pumping thinking about that. I got excited about footy starting in 60 days. So I can have one of those moments again.
I was laughing that the people next to me in the room must have been going, oh no, it's going to be, this is a party room. We're next to a party room. We're going to be up all night. And like by 10:30, I'm all quiet. It's fine. Done. The game's finished.
So what was the best home and away game you can remember? One that you attended or watched on TV?
I think that was a great one. I think it was 93. We beat Hawthorn in like a qualifying final, and it was when it went into overtime, which is one of the first overtime games I think there'd been. Like normally it was a draw and they'd go back, but this was like they go into overtime. And Hawthorn was always someone that you wanted to beat because there's always so many kids at school who supported Hawthorn. I was like, I cannot wait. And I remember that was like the first, like I was 12 years old when that, and it was like first, like Wayne Carey was being talked about so much, and it was like, that was when it was like, oh, I think I've chosen a good team here. Like we had John Lomai kicking lots of goals, but we weren't really winning like in the 91, 92. And then it was Carey. It was like, oh, this is fun. Like, oh, wow. And so I think probably the fact that they started winning at that age made me obsessed for up until 18. And then I went to uni and then it was like no one in my uni course because I was doing theatre really cared about football. So I was like, oh, I'll just ignore football then for 3 years. But one of the most memorable ones, sorry, I'll tell you. So our coach, David Noble, I was at his first game he played for Fitzroy. So it was Fitzroy and Hawthorn at North Hobart Oval. So it was like a four-hour drive from Burnie, and because it was like AFL. We hardly ever got any AFL, or VFL it was then. Didn't get them. Like we got some practice matches occasionally, but this was a proper game. So we drove the 4 and a bit hours down. It was such a shit. Like, so Hawthorn, I think Hawthorn won by like 231. Wasn't either of our teams, no one in our family goes for either team. So we drive down. It was a big drive. So we're going to stay for the whole game. Not even like, and it was like, all right. So we watched the shittiest game of football ever and then drive the 4.5 hours back to Burnie. And the whole thing, we're like, we better get McDonald's at it. It was because there was only one McDonald's in Tassie at the time. It was in Hobart. And we're like, after the game, we're going to get McDonald's, are we, Dad? He's like, yep, I think we've earned it. We're going to get McDonald's. So that's probably the most memorable game I've seen live just because of the 8-hour commute to see the worst game ever. So hopefully David Noble, coaching, has better luck.
That's pretty – well, he only played 2 senior games, I believe. Yeah. So that's pretty remarkable you saw him play at all.
Yeah.
One thing I'm fascinated by the North Melbourne, the culture of North Melbourne, or the aura around North Melbourne, is the shinboner spirit. Anyone who listens to Two Guys One Cup knows that I just love bringing out a bit of shinboner spirit. But I think of all the clubs that have their kind of reputations and their cultures, the shinboner spirit seems most accurate. There is something about North Melbourne, that working class grit that just gets shit done.
Yeah, it was really frustrating when Brad Scott really tried to kind of move away from it, because it was like, no, that's our identity. Like, you don't try and pretend, because I think North Melbourne have suffered a little bit trying to like reinvent themselves when they dropped North Melbourne for a few years to just be the Kangaroos and try and be the national team. It's like, nah, you're not going to. I'm sorry. Like, I think Collingwood's got that under wraps. Like, Collingwood are, for those who don't really like, all right, I'll go for Collingwood. They're the biggest team. They're our Manchester United. And so when Brad Scott was like, no, we're not going to mention like the shin bonus spirit. No, that's just words. We're actually going to, I'm like, nah, sometimes it's especially for the supporters to have an identity that you go, we will bring you down to our level.
I think it's like when you are not one of the major clubs, when you are a Bulldogs or North or Saints or whatever, you have to do anything you can to create, you know, like stories around you or lean into that identity, because we don't have much else. Like you say, like Collingwood and Essendon and Carlton, Hawthorn, they will dominate, you know, all the newspapers. So you need to find another angle. And the great thing that I love about footy now is like every football club has a digital department. And so there is footy news every day of the week. And I think that clubs are leaning more into their identities now, or whatever the culture is.
Yeah.
I would love to see North Melbourne fully embrace the shin boners. And I think you kind of almost are, because there is a player at your club that Will and I are fascinated by, who I think encompasses everything that is North Melbourne past and present, and that is Ben Cunnington.
Oh, yes. He is so great when he's on your team. I love him. Like, he's just – tough. He always gives 100%. Like, it's even if he's not playing well, he's gonna try, which I love. And I think all, like, the players I have loved in the past for North Melbourne have been those players who I'm gonna try. Like, I'm not gonna give up. Like, I love Daniel Wells, but it was almost like he was at 70% all the time. There'd be flashes of brilliance, and then the rest of the time he's just kind of sitting on 70%. And it was like, it was frustrating to see, because you're like, I know you're really talented. I know you can turn it on. Just do it all the time. Just try. And so, yeah, when you got split, like, I like Zeeble as well, was another one, is it, who just, you know, always is giving it a go.
But don't you think they epitomise North Melbourne in the same way? Like, this is, and people who listen to the show are going to get sick of me saying this, but I always bring up this example of, like, Matthew Richardson in, like, the 2000s, the 90s and the 2000s was Richmond.
Yeah.
Like, you, when you think of Richmond, what Richmond were, it was that player. And I think that, like, Ben Cunnington is where you guys are at right now.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? But he also, like, he has that kind of grit. He has that way. The fact that he doesn't, like, have a log, he has a, like, a Nokia 5110, you know, he doesn't have any social media. He just likes being on the fishing. He would rather be fishing all the time. Like, we scour the internet for any Ben Cunnington interviews or pocket profiles or whatever, because I just find him such an enigma. It's like Wolverine. He's this tiny little strong man who will punch you in the guts, but, you know, then also gets like his hair done. Like, it's like plugs. It's just so much going on. I'm fascinated by him.
That is, I saw the ad the other day with him promoting advanced hair. It's like...
It's so weird.
Because Hale also promote, like, Matthew, not one of the flashiest players at all, and I understand, but, like, I'm not a bald man, so I don't understand the pain, but I always think surely that's something you do after you retire. Like, just...
Yeah. Like, it's a weird choice to make, knowing that you're going to be stepping out in front of thousands of people who know what you've had done.
Yeah. Like, there's 40 cameras on you every week for your playing career. You just can't go one day, oh, no, I just grew back. I just don't understand it.
Well, I think he embraced it. I mean, that's the thing that is so fascinating about Ben Cunnington, is that, you know, so he doesn't have any social media. He doesn't do a lot of press. He seems like a pretty humble guy, just wants to be left alone. Yet then he takes a deal, with the strangest endorsement deal. Like, talk about coming out in the weirdest kind of way.
Because I'm always thinking, did he just go, you know what, I'm going to do this myself. They saw the name, went, oh, are you the football player? Yeah. Well, we can do this for nothing if you sign on to do some of our ads. And he's probably going...
Because no one is looking at Ben Cunnington and going, that's the guy we've got to approach.
Yeah.
like of all the AFL footballers that you're like, who do we want to promote our business? Like, you know, Gary Ablett, you probably would, is the first one off the top of their head, no pun intended. The fact that it ended up in Ben Cunnington's lap, or on his scalp more specifically, it's just amazing. I just think it's so fantastic.
Yeah, very good player though.
So moving into kind of the 2000s, so you're coming out of the 90s.
Yep.
And the Wayne Carey incident happens.
Yes.
How devastating is that?
I heard it on the radio. I was at uni, so I wasn't buying the paper. It was before the internet. And so I just heard it, a snippet on the radio in the news break of the hour. I was like, I want to know more. I do want to know more. And so, and this is shocking, but I think that story is the Herald Sun's highest selling paper of all time.
Wow. Like,
more than 9/11. More people bought the Herald Sun because they wanted to know about Carey and Stevens. And so it is shocking, but it's that thing of, like, I think the club made all the right decisions going, yeah, you got to go. Stevens stays. Becomes beloved. I think the club kind of rally around. Glenn Archer takes a bigger role in terms of, you know, he was named Shinboner of the Century. And I think pretty much off the back of how he handled that and got everyone behind him and made sure everyone was going forward. And so you hear a story like that from the club and you're like, oh, this is great. And then I think it was only a year later or something, like, you've got Adam Simpson doing that video about the chicken. I don't know if you remember the chicken. Yeah.
Yeah. Was it Pedro the chicken or
something like that? And then that was like, oh, all that good work done. Like, just done. Like, people, yes.
So what do you think was going on at the club at the time? So, you know, you've had your kind of premiership run. Players are getting a little bit older. You're still playing finals, or at least middle of the ladder, right, about that time.
Yeah.
So do you think that this was just a case of, you know, Pagan's left, you know, there's a bit of directionless, Carey's achieved everything he's going to achieve beyond a premiership?
Yeah, I mean, you hear all the stories of Carey being an arsehole, or leading up before that as well, but maybe because the shine was off him a bit, like he was on the way down. Say this happened in 95, does the club react the same way? Like, is it Stevens who's on the way out because they're like, oh, yes, this guy's going to win his premiership? Yeah. And it is.
I barrack for a club that had Tony Lockett there for 8 years.
There you go, yeah.
It's fair to say when you've got a player of that calibre, administrations tend to look the other way most of the time.
And so,
I think with that one, they couldn't. It was so public and it was so scandalous. And also, they would have had a mutiny. Yeah. Imagine, like, all the other players, like, there's no way they would play under Wayne Carey or play alongside him.
Yeah.
So that game against Adelaide the following year when Wayne Carey's playing for the Crows.
Yeah.
Were you tuned in? Did you tune into that? Were you excited to see?
Absolutely. And it was that thing of, like, it's so weird when you see your favourite player wearing a different top. It's just, it looks wrong because you've grown up one way. And then that moment in that game where I think Glenn Archer kind of scruffed him, and I can't remember which one flinched. I don't know if it was Glenn Archer who flinched.
No, it was Carey.
Carey flinched?
Carey. Yeah, yeah. So there's I think it was Stevens lays a tackle or a bump, and then Archer comes over, and then they have a to and fro, and then Archer cocks his fist and Carey flinches. And like Channel 7 must have been rubbing their hands together because they must have had, I mean, they would have had a camera on Carey the whole night, but they capture it so perfectly. Like, it's like something from the WWE.
But that seeing that was like kind of sad. Like, at the initial thing was like, yeah, that's great. And then you go, oh, this is like
not cool.
Well, it's grown men being children. And it's that thing of like, and I was only like 20 at the time. So I was like, oh, but you look back and go, oh, this is, I don't know. Like, it's. And
At the time, though, as the 20-year-old Josh, did you want Archer to knock his block
absolutely.
Off? Or what did you want?
No, absolutely. Right. Yeah, I there was that thing. It was like, yeah, this is our team, and it kind of was galvanizing the fact that you go through that diversity, and then you kind of go, we can do this, and here's the enemy, and that's the enemy, and also Adelaide, who beat us in 98 in the grand final. You always do. Right. People who beat you in grand finals, you're like, oh yeah, I can't stand that team anymore, and so yeah, there was a bit of that, but I don't remember if I was really like, yeah, punch his lights out or just, I hope we win.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's weird because I've never had the experience of hating a former Saints player, like, especially not like a champion or a former captain of the club or anything like that. You're in a fairly unique position where, you know, there's a few scandals in the AFL, which is, you know, which are huge, and this is one of them. So you've gone from having a player who really redefined who the Kangaroos were in the 90s. I mean, he was such a good player.
Yeah.
You know, like, say what you like about Wayne Carey the man, but it's undeniable his football talent. Like, if you go on YouTube and check out his highlights, you're just like, holy shit. Like, he would dominate today.
Yeah.
He was only like 193 centimetres, but he played like he was so much bigger.
Yeah. And it's that thing, because where he played centre half forward, it was like, if he played full forward, he'd kick 100 goals a year. Like, he's just so strong and fast. And I guess, you know, Nick Riewoldt is another one who probably, you know, if he just played in the forward line in that era, would kick 100 goals as well. But I don't know, just the fact that you had someone centre half forward, just the captain there, is just a great place to be for the captain as well, because you're like calling the shots and everyone kind of flocks to you, and then people like your Pickets and your Winston Abrahams around them as well can, you know, crumb and kick goals. I mean,
That's a thing. Like, it's not just his football prowess, but he was a leader. Like, you know, he had that kind of Michael Jordan drive for excellence and the actual ability. But it's that cockiness, you know, like, there are sometimes your team will play another team and they'll have a player like that or a Buddy Franklin or whatever, and you just like, I can't be mad. It's like Dusty Martin in the grand final last year. Like, just seeing him play, I'm like, if I was a Geelong fan, I would be like, well, it's fine we lose this one, because how the fuck are you going to stop that? That is a once-in-a-generation player.
It's like in the NBA when Charles Barkley said, well, I lost to the best player ever. Like, so you're going to have to accept it. I wish I won, but I didn't. He's the best player ever. But the other thing, like, so there is that a famous story about apparently a footy trip. They went to Vegas and Carey gave Longmire his wallet and said, don't give this to me. I'll ask for it. Don't give it to me. And then loses a bunch of cash and tries to fight Longmire for his wallet. And Longmire stands up to him and then I think just goes to the room and just chucks the wallet and says, don't ask me to do anything for you ever again. And I guess that's like, it's great that Longmire was mad enough to go, yeah, I'm not like your minder. Like, you can look after yourself. But it must have been just having someone like that around the club. Like, and I know all football clubs have these, like, they're full of alphas, but just have the most alpha of alpha. It must be exhausting after a while as well, especially when they're on the way down as well. And they're not like, it's all right to be alpha when you are going out and you're the best player on the field, but when you kind of start to wane, it must be a very weird, like, just dynamic around the club.
Well, I guess it's kind of the balance, right, isn't it? Like, if you look at similar type players in similar positions, like Steve Kernahan, Dermot Brereton, you know, they're all sort of dominant centre-half forwards, but maybe the balance of the team or the grit of the coach or something was what kept those guys in check, because they had egos.
Yeah.
You know, if there had been, like, the attention at North Melbourne on that team had been more spread, that Wayne wouldn't have felt sort of so bold to kind of behave that way. Or, you know, maybe it was other ongoing issues. But there are players who have been as talented or at least, you know, as strong a leaders as him who have managed to kind of, like, still contribute to a club successfully and not, you know, have to exit in disgrace or anything like that.
Yeah, see, one of my favourite current players is Joel Selwood. I just like how he leads. I mean, I wish he wouldn't drop his shoulder every single time, but I think as a, like, someone, you look at someone, all right, yeah, you are a good leader of young men. And I think the older I get, the more I want someone like that at my club. Go, yeah, I need someone, which is why Cunnington and Zeebel, I think, are great for North Melbourne, because, you know, they seem like pretty decent men who are good leaders of other young, impressionable men.
Well, do you think, like, a lot of the reason you didn't win many games last year is because Ben Cunnington was out so much?
Yeah, I just think very young. I kind of, it's always that you want most of your players in that 50 to 100 game window. And I think we were just too young. And also when you, I was in two minds about how it would go when people away from their families. So I thought, oh, some young clubs might do really well because, you know, they might not have young kids at home, or it's almost like, oh, we're off at uni. It's almost like we're away from our family and all that kind of stuff. But the North Melbourne players just didn't seem to cope at all, because the first two games of the season before they went into lockdown, we won. It was like, oh, call the finals now. We're top of the ladder. We haven't lost. And then it all just went to absolute shit after that. But, yeah, it was always that surprising thing of what teams are going to do well in that kind of, like, almost campus living environment.
I mean, this is sort of like a sidebar, but round one last year you beat us. That was the first team you beat before the lockdown. And I don't know if you know this, Josh, but I'm a St Kilda ambassador. I'm on the clock when I'm watching football. It's official ambassador business. But they asked me to record some video content to put on the website, which was just like, you know, watching round one and reactions to the game. And we were leading that entire game. I think we were 30 points up at one stage, and then we lose by a kick in the end. And I've never been happier for a pandemic to be declared. Because that video, the shit that was coming out of my mouth, I had a six-month-old daughter at that stage. And my wife is like, calm the fuck down. You can't talk like that. I'm like, I'm so sorry. I can't believe this club has done it to me again.
Yeah. Oh.
Well, it worked out in the end, didn't it?
Yeah, karma got us. We were done.
Just to go back to the Ben Brown thing just for a second. So I would have thought that, like, a guy who kicks that many goals, you know, over the better part of the last 6 years, you know, he won the Coleman how many times? Four times or something like that? Then has, like, a fairly, you know, for reasons that have been discussed and other ones that I'm sure are probably a bit more personal. Was there, do you feel like he was exited by the club, or do you feel like it was a mutual thing, or what's going on?
I feel like he was pushed out. I feel like they kind of just set up, it's like some games you just could say they just weren't even looking for him to kick to him. And like, he's a big presence. He's a huge dude. And
can't miss him.
Yeah. And like the fact that it had been working for us. He lead out one-on-one. He's great. But also we've got some great small forwards who can like crumb and stay anyway. But it was, and then whether or not like Shaw thought, oh yeah, other clubs had worked him out or whatever it was, it was very frustrating to go, oh, this was working, but we're going to try something else. And that other thing didn't work. And they never went back to it. And I understand he was injured for a bit and he was having some issues, but it was like, yeah, I don't know. It was, as a fan of both the club and the player, I was very disheartened by going, oh, I don't understand. Normally, like the club says, oh, we're doing this for this reason. And you go, okay, I understand. You're playing the young ones. That's fine. But they didn't really give a reason of what they were doing.
Actually, I think you are onto something. I'm just listening to you talk, and you said something very early in the episode about you don't think the pain is over for North Melbourne. And I don't know what, I'm just listening to you watching you talk, and the things you're saying, you're making me think, oh God, he's right. Like I can sort of see what you're talking about. Like the club has not, they're not done with whatever they're on the path they're doing.
Yeah.
It's not over yet.
Yeah. Well,
like there's no quick bounce back from this.
No, I think hopefully David Noble is great with young players because he's got a lot of them and he can get them up to AFL standard. But all players, it's not like it's the NBA where rookies can come in and really dominate. Like it takes 2, 3, 4 years before like young players actually can be competitive all season long. And yeah, I worry that we've gone too young. I mean,
you've cut too deep.
Yeah, Stevenson's a great pickup as well. So hopefully he does well and other players can look at that and go, oh, maybe I can get a fresh start at North Melbourne as well. But yeah, it's tough.
This is what you want is a Fremantle year. Fremantle, brand new coach, Justin Longmuir. Can't remember how many games they won, but it felt it was around about like 5 or 6.
Yeah.
But they stood up against good opposition. They had a couple of close losses. You just want that effort and some green shoots. That's what North Melbourne want. Like, if North Melbourne only win 4 games for the year, but they're in it for a lot of it, then that's a win, I reckon.
Yeah.
You just don't want to finish bottom.
No. No, especially North. I think North especially, it's I don't know what next year's going to look like as well financially for the AFL, and you just don't want to be in that situation where, because we are the least supported Victorian club, I think. We have the least amount of members. And also you just don't want any excuse for them to go, yeah, we're making the league smaller or we're having another whatever make.
I mean, it's tiring being a North supporter, always being the club that is brought up in relocation or merger talks. I mean, talk about what it's like when the Queensland discussion about putting North Melbourne on the Gold Coast. Like, how did you feel about that?
See, it was frustrating because you go, oh, well, there's no connection though. There's no connection between those two clubs. And then...
But Tasmania is the obvious one.
Well, yeah. And it's also, at least Tasmania is close to Melbourne. It's kind of like, although the fact that North Melbourne are going south makes no sense to me. That's like, as a marketing thing, that's like, all right, you've got to fix that. Like, yeah.
Yeah. I didn't even think of that. Yeah. You're 100% correct. The team that is defined by being north is heading south.
Yeah. So maybe that's the connection with the Brisbane. But it is that thing of like when, and it's also people talk about it as if it doesn't matter. It's like, oh, well, North Melbourne can go somewhere. Like you see all the experts like, on the football shows and stuff like that. Like, oh, well, North Melbourne could probably merge or whatever. It's like, no, we're a club. We've got good history. We've got a great history of like in the league and some great players and coaches and stuff like that. And so, yeah, it is tough when people are like, oh, well, It's just North Melbourne.
I always ask this of people on the show, what would happen if North Melbourne, and I don't want this to happen, but if in some future North Melbourne were to fold, do you think that you would continue to follow football? Would you find another team?
I would probably support Carlton because my dad supports Carlton. And that would...
And Mick Martin, the Mick Martin
connection. Mick Martin, Dennis Pagan was one of their great coaches at Carlton. but yeah, maybe only because I've got a lot of like memories of watching Carlton games with my dad and I could, yeah. And they're also, at the minute, a team that's kind of have been where North Melbourne have been. They were struggling and they're kind of on the way up. And I don't know, but I always have a soft spot for Carlton just because my dad support Carlton.
I mean, I've never really asked this of anyone, but what do you reckon the breakup period is if once a club goes? Like, how quickly do you think you move on?
I'd probably have a season where I'm just floating around. Like just watching games.
So sad.
I know.
Like just listening to Amy Mann.
Yeah.
Just like really. Just walking alone, trench coat, yeah. Collar popped.
Just throwing rocks in the creek, skimming stones. Lighting the team poster on the beach, watching it go up, pushing it out to see. But it would be, I don't know. I think, because I still like watching football, so I wouldn't just, give up on footy, but it wouldn't be the same. Like having a club that you supported your whole life and then going, nah, I've changed. But yeah, were you ever close?
I think it's in this.
Have you ever been close to switching teams? Like during the whole, when they lit the little person on fire.
I don't know if I've never been close. I feel like I'm too far gone now.
Yep.
Like it's like St Kilda a family. You know what I mean? Like you've got family members that you don't necessarily want to talk to.
Yeah.
I think the closest I've been was, funnily enough, after, do you remember when St Kilda and North Melbourne played the Good Friday game like 2 years in 2018? It was the first time St Kilda and North had been given a Friday night game in like 7 years. And it was a public holiday. And it was like, don't fuck this up, guys. And I don't know if you remember that game, but I was in LA and I stayed up till like 2 a.m. to watch it. And it was possibly the worst exhibition, probably worse than that game you saw in Burnie.
Yeah.
It was a fucking calamitous. And I'd just been like, that's when the Saints had first reached out to me to be an ambassador and they wanted me to do a bit more social media stuff. And I watched that and was like, I don't think I want to follow this club anymore. Like if that's the shit they're going to dish up. After the roadmap to 2018 told me that this was the finals year, it was so disappointing. And I remember I talked to someone who works at the club a few weeks later and I just sort of said, look, you know, because we only won 4 games that year. We had a terrible year. That was the start of the end for Richardson. And I remember talking to her and said, like, what was the moment that you thought this season wasn't going on? And she said, the game against North Melbourne. Yeah. She said, we built ourselves up so much for that. We knew we had a big audience and stuff. And it was just, they just couldn't connect. And the players... they were shattered. They lost all confidence. I think it's like round 2 or 3 of the year. And so that was the closest I've ever been to being like, God, fuck this all.
Yeah.
I don't need any of this shit. I've got enough problems in my life without this.
Yeah. It's always that thing when you watch those big games and like it's like the games in New Zealand they try to do and they were always such fizzes. And it's like part of you like going, oh, like one, I don't think – I know they want to sell it overseas. I just don't think it's going to happen. I just think they just – focus on making the game great and then that's how you'll get people overseas to watch. I mean, this year was perfect when they had like no other sport in the world pretty much. And then it was like...
that's what we need.
Like, yeah, then there was like I think McCaffrey, is that his name? The guy in like a ex-footballer, like gridiron player who was picked a team and was...
Pat.
Yeah, yeah. But like... it's that kind of stuff that's going to get it. Not just playing an exhibition game or playing a game where there are no fans, because part of the joy of the AFL is going to a big stadium full of supporters who are so passionate and at the end of the game can just leave and everyone, like for the most part, you can mix with other people of other clubs and it's fine. And that's part of the joy of what makes the game so great.
But there is something kind of like cartoonish. I quite like playing games in Shanghai and they're talking about playing one in California. It's like, this is a professional sporting code.
Yeah.
Doing this fucking like Harlem Globetrotters kind of take it round the world bullshit.
I know. See, I mean, the NBA and the NFL have played games in London and stuff like that. And it's, I guess, but I think they've already got the supporter base there. Whereas China, no one cares about the game in China. Like, you're not going to – like, the Gold Coast Suns as well, of all the teams to go there, it's like, oh, this is not going to – like, yeah.
Well, Saints went there last year and half the team got food poisoning. Yeah. It was one of the funniest games I have ever seen in my life. Like, they were so ill. They were so, like, unhappy to be out there. And then Jarryn Geary, who 8 weeks earlier had his, like, thigh burst open because he got a massive corky, had it stitched up, like, 72 stitches, breaks his leg first game back. And I'm like, this is perfect.
Yeah.
Absolutely perfect. Josh, thank you so much for coming on the show. I genuinely mean it when I say, like, I love North Melbourne. I wish I knew more about them. I'm hoping we can know more about them in 2021. What are your predictions, good or bad?
I think we will struggle this year, but hopefully the young group come together and by the end of the season we get a couple of wins in a row. That would be great. If we can get a run on like two or three wins, I would say that is a pass mark for what we experienced in 2020.
I think that's right. I think that two wins in a row is good. That's what a young team needs. It's just the small little victories. And maybe, and this could happen in the two in a row or separately, an upset.
Yeah.
Like you beat like a GWS or a Bulldogs or one of those kind of things. Not a really good team, not a Richmond. Yeah. Come on, let's not fly too close to the sun.
But
one of those bottom ranked top eight teams.
If we beat Hawthorne, that's great. That's a great day. If we beat Hawthorn and Essendon, that's a great year. Done.
Well, let's make it happen. Josh, thanks so much.
We are two guys, one car.